Hello, I'm Alan Wenzel, FreePod host, and I'd like to welcome you to this extended interview. Since its inception nearly 65 years ago, Highland Community College has played a very important role in the lives of residents of Northwest Illinois. The work of Illinois community colleges has evolved in recent years, and Highland has seen its share of challenges as it strives to encourage the personal and professional development of residents in the college's district. Joining me today to help us better understand what is currently happening on campus is Chris Kaberski, president of Highland Community College. Chris, thank you for taking time from a busy beginning of the semester schedule to talk with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to share what's happening at Highland.
Good. We've been planning this interview for a while, and it's nice to finally sit down with you, Chris, and talk a little bit about activities and events at Highland. So I'm going to start with the question that I always got when I was employed at Highland, and anyone wanted to know about Highland. The first question was, how's enrollment doing? So let's start with that. What's enrollment look like for spring semester, Chris?
So as of Monday, headcount for spring 2025 is up 7.2%, and credit hours are up 7.7% from spring of 24. Now, 10th day is our census day, so this will continue to fluctuate over the next week or so. But this marks six consecutive semesters of credit hour increase, which is atypical for colleges during this time.
I want to talk more about that in a second, but those are good numbers, Chris. Do you have any idea how the hours are divided out between transfer and occupational certificate programs?
Yes. Yeah, so about 70% of our credit hours would be attributed to transfer programs and general education requirements, and about 20% would be attributed to career tech or our vocational programs. And then the other 10% would be in adult ed and personal development programming.
Do those percentages, have they stayed about the same over the last decade or 10 years?
Yes, those are pretty.
They don't fluctuate much.
No, they really have stayed around that over the last several years, at least in my time at Highland, which this marks my 10th year. So
I'm wondering what the trend lines are telling you, Chris, about short-term and long-term enrollment. I know that enrollment goes up and down. Thankfully, Highlands has been going up lately. When you look out next few years or few months or even a couple of semesters, what's on the horizon, do you think, for enrollment trends?
So, you know, you probably have heard about the demographic enrollment cliff that is been, you know, on the horizon for years, and that's going to continue. What that really means is that there are fewer and fewer high school graduates because there are fewer and fewer high school students due to the decreasing population there. So Highland has really shifted some of our efforts. We continue to work with our high schools, but we're also really targeting the adult population and other groups of individuals who are working that need to be reskilled. So we continue also to see our ethnic population and our College Now programs growing. So I believe that that trend will continue. And then as far as program growth, it's been really across campus. In the fall, we saw theater, natural science, automotive, welding, history, and ag see our biggest increases. Last academic year, early childhood education jumped by about 150%. That was somewhat because of an influx of grant dollars to offset tuition for that program. But what we're seeing overall is that the growth is happening across campus, across disciplines. And I think that's a positive trend because that means that no one area is going to fizzle. It's happening across the campus in general.
Mm-hmm. A rising tide raises all boats. And so if you have good programs going, it helps enrollment in all these other areas. You really spread out the fortune among all programming within the college when you're able to have success in even three or four.
Yes. And that's really kind of what we've been trying to capitalize on. We've really been trying to strengthen programs that we know continue to have potential growth. And then also think about program growth maybe beyond what we are currently offering, what else might attract students, but also meet the economic needs of the area.
Comparing ourselves to other community colleges is tricky business, and I don't really want to do that. But yet, are we doing a little better maybe than some other community colleges around the state from your travels around Illinois? What's your sense of what's happening with other community colleges? Are they as well positioned as we are?
So I think some of the larger schools are seeing growth again, particularly Elgin, Triton, some of those
College
bigger
of
schools.
DuPage.
Yes. Some of the smaller schools are starting to, but really when you look at what's happening across the state, Highland is definitely in the top tier of growth and positioning ourselves for the future. Something that I think maybe resonates with that, we recently learned about Smart Asset, which is a financial company, and they did a comparison of 616 two-year schools across the nation that offer associate degrees and have at least 500 full-time enrollees. And they used the what's called IPEDS, the Integrated Post-Secondary Education Data System, which all colleges have to report through. They used the data from 22-23. And they looked at three markers or criterion. It was based on retention rate, cost of tuition and fees, and student to faculty ratio. And in that study, Highland was ranked number 59 nationally and number one as the best community college in Illinois.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So we're very excited to share that news.
Yeah, that's great news.
And certainly different markers might point to different things, but the retention rate, I think, is a really critical piece in our enrollment.
And I'm going to get to that in a little bit, too, talking about retention here at Highland and how well we've done with that. One of the questions I have, and you kind of implied a little bit earlier, that these challenges about enrollment are not going to go away anytime soon. If we're seeing less numbers with high school graduates, that's going to continue. Are there other enrollment challenges out there for community colleges right now and for Highland in particular?
Yes, because there are fewer and fewer students to recruit, particularly that traditional age, we see a lot more competition with the four-year schools. And they're trying to reach into dual credit, for example.
Oh, they are.
We have not experienced that at Highland, but that's happening across the state. And also, there's a new group of students, or not students, they're called NEETs. I learned this recently. And they're not in employment, education, or training, but they just recently graduated from high school. And that's 11% of the population.
Really?
So we're seeing, I think that trend kind of started in COVID, but it's not stopped. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a lot of high school grads that really aren't actively pursuing anything. Out of school.
But it is taking, but are available to take some classes if they just want to pursue an interest of some kind.
Yes.
Interesting. I know some of our listeners might know about dual credit and understand what it is. Could you take a moment, Chris, please, just to describe what that program is about?
Sure. So dual credit is the opportunity for high school students to take college-level courses while they're still at high school, typically within their high school. They can be offered by either qualified faculty members at the high school, or they can be offered by part-time or full-time faculty at Highland. We offer dual credit throughout our district in almost all of our high schools. Some are utilizing our faculty to do that. Some are utilizing their own. And then we also have partnership with Career Tech Academy that many of those Career Tech programs are offering dual credit on campus. So students come for cosmetology, criminal justice, ag, welding, and some other of our Career Tech programs. So it's an opportunity for students to get a taste of college while they're still in high school, and also to work on their general education requirements, particularly, or, you know, try something out like becoming a CNA to see if you want to be a nurse. But those really provide opportunities for high school students to begin their college career early while they're still within the support system of their high school and their home. And from my own experience, having three children that did a lot of dual credit, it really sets them up for a positive educational experience in the future.
Mm-hmm. How many students do we have enrolled in dual credit?
So I don't know the actual number, but 36% of our population or our enrollment now is based
on
dual credit.
That's substantial.
Yes,
it is. That's a substantial percentage. I know that the pandemic is something we don't want to talk about anymore. It's rapidly disappearing in our rearview mirrors. And yet I've got to ask you, how did the pandemic change college operations for the better or maybe for not so better? But are there any long lasting impacts that has had on the college?
I think one thing that I have really talked about to our faculty and staff is holding on to that ability to change rapidly. We proved that we could do it during COVID, and higher ed often moves at a slow pace.
Yes.
So keeping that idea that we can move quickly to meet the needs of our students and our community is something that I think our pace is faster as a result. And also, we've increased our online presence, particularly as it relates to student services. So offering tutoring, advising, and other supports online as well as in person, so that students have that flexibility. I think at the end, at this point, we've kind of settled on about 30% of our classes being online, which is really pretty close to what it was before. It maybe increased a little bit, but we have a lot more hybrid and high flex opportunities. Hybrid meaning that the students might come to the classroom 2 days a week and then have one day online. High flex meaning that we have some faculty that are allowing students to choose on any particular day, whether they want to be online and attend via Zoom or they want to be in person. So students have more flexibility to accommodate their own work schedules and life circumstances. And I believe that that is an outgrowth and a positive change after COVID, that we just have more flexibility for our students.
I think those are good positives. When the college was adaptable and flexible, and now you're giving students more options to participate in the college, not just simply being here in person, but through a number of different means, they can still be a college student.
Yes, and that is certainly needed, especially as we're thinking about trying to reach an adult population that's probably working, has a family. We have to have that flexibility for them to be able to pursue education.
So good news came out of bad news.
Yes, it did.
At the end of the day. I want to ask you a little bit, Chris, about some of the new programs or recent additions you may have made to course offerings that has excited you or has helped boost some of the enrollment figures that you've talked about. What's new for the college?
If you look at our strategic plan, it's entitled Reimagine 2027. And Reimagine has kind of been our mantra, particularly coming out of COVID. But in general, we need to reimagine not our mission, but how we deliver that mission. And so part of that is reimagining our classrooms and our offerings to make sure that they are going to meet the needs of today's student and the students of the future. And so thinking about that, we've done a lot of modifications and improvements in many of our labs and our classrooms. Some of that was done through the legacy campaign that the foundation did, and some of it was due through other institutional funds and some of our bond money. But we have completely revamped all of our science labs except for one, and that one is on the docket for, I think, summer of 26. And when we say we remodeled them, we took them down to the dirt, literally, and we completely put in new infrastructure so that they could offer the technology and the modern equipment that is needed in science today. And so that was one of the first projects. We've also repurposed our auto body lab and made it our welding lab, which about tripled the space of that program. We just had a ribbon cutting right before Christmas for our manufacturing and CNC lab. We expanded that space and have an increase in capacity by 25%. We also added the hospital simulation lab to our nursing unit. So students have a much more real clinical experience on campus before they actually go into the hospitals. We have simulation mannequins in those observation rooms. So our students can treat a patient that is computerized to respond appropriately to whether the treatment is right or wrong. So those mannequins can do everything, including giving birth and having heart attacks and even throwing up, the recent one.
Oh, no.
Yes. So a true experience for our nursing
but
students.
But can they tell a good joke?
I don't think so, but they can groan. We also have added virtual reality to criminal justice.
Oh, excuse me for a second. I want to go stay with the nursing for just a second, Chris. Don't you have a mobile lab too?
Yes,
can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, we were able to get appropriation funding through some work that Sherry Bustos did when she was still in office. And that mobile medical unit we also had a ribbon cutting for it in November. It allows us to take clinicals on the road so our students can work with our health partners to do blood pressure checks, flu clinics, all those kinds of things out throughout our community. Mm-hmm. And we know that we have many pockets in our district that don't have quick access to healthcare.
Okay.
So this will help us meet a community need, as well as allow our students to practice with community community members that they wouldn't necessarily see otherwise.
Does that lab have a set schedule or circuit that it takes when it goes out into the district?
So because we just got it in the middle of last semester, that's what the nursing area is working on to create that schedule and work with our community partners. One of the things that I envision is it will help with sports physicals and serve as a recruitment tool for Highland. I see it parked out in front of high schools and they come to get their sports physical and our recruiter is there to talk to them about programs at Highland at the same time.
Wonderful. It's kind of a, not a dual credit, but a dual recruitment effort.
It is. And it's also been in some parades. So it gives us another way to be visible.
Great.
And especially in the western part of our district, we often struggle with that visibility. So it will help us in a lot of ways. And to my knowledge, it is the only one like it in Illinois.
Really?
Yes. So that's exciting too.
Yeah, that is exciting. I want to return for a moment to the strategic plan, which you mentioned a moment ago, Chris. And in reviewing the strategic plan, there are a number of different metrics that have been called out for the college to use in identifying how well we do with this plan. Let me just list two or three, and I'd like to ask you to comment on how well we're doing with some of those metrics. One of the metrics was to increase adult student credit enrollment. Sounds like we're doing that. Retention and completion rates was another metric that will tell us how well we're doing. And the number of students involved in co-curricular or extracurricular experiences was another metric. Can you talk about how we're doing on some of those number metrics to tell us about our success as a college?
So our adult education program continues to grow, and it particularly has seen exponential growth as it relates to English as a second language. In the fall, we served over 125 ESL students. Many of them are parents of students that are in the Freeport School District. So we even offered some of those classes at one of the schools so that the parents could do that they dropped off their children. So that area continues to see a lot of growth. And then when you're thinking about a more traditional college student, our 21 to 30 age category grew, I think it was by 6% in the fall. So that again goes back to some of our targeted efforts to try to reconnect with students who maybe came to Highland and didn't finish, or who could benefit from upskilling for the workplace and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. One of the other metrics, Chris, was the enrollment to increase the enrollment of non-traditional students and student athletes. How are we doing on that one?
So the student athlete population also has increased. We currently have 137 student athletes, which is up 19% from 2023. So I believe that we're seeing those increases as well. And as I said, our 21 to 30-year-olds increased by 6%. I will say that our 31 and over population decreased a little bit in the fall. So we still have some work to do there. But really, if you can capture that 21 to 30-year-old age group before they get, you know, too embedded in their career,
or
to me,
even.
That's really the kind of a target population that we should be thinking about.
Interesting. Are there any other success measures that the college uses in determining how well it's doing besides those that we've talked about?
So I will talk a little bit about retention. Our effort has really been two-pronged on recruitment and retention. We know that we have fewer, particularly college-age students to recruit, so it's even more important that we maintain them and that we help them be successful. So in the strategic enrollment management plan, which is coupled with the strategic plan itself, our retention target rate for 2025 is 70%. And by fall of 22, we were at 69%. And we believe that when we look at this next round of data, we will be at 70%. And that is truly important for, you know, the students to complete. It is not as easy for part-time students. That hovers more in the 45% range. But when we compare ourselves to other community colleges, many times their part-time student retention rate is more in the 30s. So I think we're doing well, but we know we have more work to do there, and we continue to think about wraparound services like, you know, tutoring. We have success coaches, supplemental instruction, and other things that we've done to help boost that retention and student success.
It strikes me that 70% retention for our traditional full-time students is a good goal, a pretty ambitious goal, and it's one that you're meeting. I think that's really good work. Do we have any other benchmarks that tell us how other community colleges do on that? I'm guessing we're probably doing better.
Yes. And that was one of the things that the Smart Asset report showed. We, in that particular report comparison, we were at 66% at the time, but we were outperforming most of the Illinois community colleges. And to be ranked 59 out of 616, obviously are outperforming a lot of others too.
And number one in the state of Illinois.
Yes.
That's great.
Yes.
Let's turn our attention for a few moments, Chris, to looking ahead, the next 2 to 3 years. What's on the horizon for the college in the terms of new programs, projects? What's being planned for the college?
Well, there's a lot underway. As I mentioned, we're going to complete that science lab. We have several other projects that are on the docket. We are moving the testing center over to Building H, where advising is located. So it will be more of a one-stop opportunity for students. When they come in, they can see their advisor, they can test, and they can register and do their financial aid all in one building, which on cold days like this will be very nice.
Right.
But one of the things that really is on the horizon has to do with our athletic facility. As you probably know, we have had a partnership with the YMCA. It was a 50-year agreement that will expire in 2030. And so Highland has had an athletic strategic plan that points to enrollment growth potential if we would expand some of our athletic competition teams, particularly soccer and track is what we're looking at. We know that those student athletes complete at a high rate. They complete at a higher rate than many of our other students, probably because they have the coach's support, they have a cohort, and they have other requirements that keep them on a positive path. So when we're thinking about growing enrollment, we certainly want to do that with groups that have already shown success, and athletes being one of them. Athletic recruitment also is different than recruitment for community colleges. Community colleges are not allowed to recruit outside of our boundaries unless we have a program that our neighboring schools don't have. So that can create some limitations. But when it comes to athletics, we can recruit, you know, across the state, outside of the state, and even internationally if we choose. So that is part of that thought process too. One of the buildings that has not really been touched by remodeling at this point is our athletic facility. Other than the gymnasium, it has the same basic look that it had when it was built. And so the Y has been engaged in a strategic plan of their own, and Highland has been thinking about expansion. And so collaboratively, we've been working together to think about what that's going to look like for the future. We want to support each other and recognize that it's going to look different. And so what we're trying to do collectively is position each organization for future success and future growth. When that partnership was developed, Highland had 4 competitive teams. We now have 11. The Y did not have childcare, and now they serve around 150 children. They need to expand. We need to expand. And so what I believe will unfold is a project to build onto our athletic facility and also remodel it within so that it better serves the needs of our students and hopefully better serves the needs of the community as a result.
So the footprint of a new facility, I'm going to say new or remodeled, redone facility, would be about this. It'd be in the same location, but with a larger footprint, it'd be a larger building, more facilities for either the athletic teams or for things like childcare.
And that's what we're envisioning. I mean, we haven't gotten to an actual schematic yet, and we haven't actually settled on the scope of the project. We believe the The Y will be wrapping up their strategic plan around April. And that is also the time when we feel like we need to make some decisions about the partnership. So it's aligning really nicely with our time frame as well. But I do believe that the footprint will be larger. Particularly, we're looking at what I'm going to refer to as a field house that has turf so that our baseball, softball teams have an indoor practice area on campus. They don't currently. And also that would allow soccer to practice indoor. And we're even thinking about what could we put inside it so that track would at least have a straightaway. So that's kind of what our thought process is. But none of that has been finalized at this point.
Sure.
But that definitely would be the biggest project that Highland has undertaken in decades.
It sounds like it. It also sounds like the college and the Y will be working together cooperatively on whatever it is that's going to happen. It's going to be some kind of a joint venture.
That's what we would hope. I don't know that the Y will end up in the same facility because it may not meet their future needs, but the partnership is going to remain. We're going to continue to work and support the Y, and they are dependent on our early childhood education students to be feeders for their childcare program and things like that. We envision together that that's not going to change. It may just look different, but that's part of reimagining.
You mentioned that the current agreement runs out in 2030. Is that kind of the end point at which something has to be done by then, but there's work being done now? Is there any kind of a specific timeline in place for any major pieces of this puzzle to be put together?
Well, I think when the Y completes their strategic plan and shares that with their board mid-April, they will get a better sense of their direction that will then help us to have a better sense of what we need to do together or what we need to do independently at that point. So I would say by the end of this semester, we would have a clearer path.
I remember when the partnership was formed a little over 50 years ago when the building was built. That was an exciting time then for these two entities to come together. I believe it was the first time anywhere in the United States a YMCA had partnered with a community college to build a joint facility. And we were kind of the groundbreaker for doing that. And I think others around the country followed suit after that. But it was quite a venture back then. It sounds like it'll be another important adventure and venture.
Yes, and I think so. And I think it's an opportunity for both organizations to really propel them to the future. I do anticipate it's going to look a little different. And I know that change is also a little, tough when you're accustomed to something being one way. But I really think that when you look at it, say in 10 years from now, you look back, you're going to say, wow, that was amazing. And look what these two entities can do collectively with the community as a result of the changes that have happened.
Chris, this has been a wonderful conversation. I've learned a lot about the progress the college continues to make in our district and offering all kinds of programs and services for our residents. I'm wondering, as a way to kind of pull this all together, you've talked a lot of numbers. Do you have any final thoughts or things you'd want to leave with our listeners, Chris, as we close off our interview today?
So I think my message to the community would be that Highland remains dedicated to our mission. We want to provide quality education and services to Northwest Illinois. We also recognize that to do that in the future and be sustainable, we have to reimagine how we deliver that. It's what we're trying to do now. We want to remain relevant, resilient, and sustainable for the next 60 years. And really, I know you probably see on our billboards, it's all here. To me, that's not a slogan. It's a commitment. And we want it to all be here for the future students and residents of the community for many, many years to come.
Chris, thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate you spending some moments out of a busy schedule to talk to us and help us understand a little bit more about the college's operation. And I'll remind listeners, if you ever have any questions about anything that's happening at Highland, please feel free to contact the president's office. And I'm sure between Terry and Chris, they'll find the right person to give you the answers that you're looking for. So thanks again, Chris, for all that you've done.
And thank you, Alan.
This is Alan Wenzel reminding you to tune in to our regular news podcast every Thursday at noon on all major podcast platforms. And remember to go to our platforms on Tuesday at noon when these in-depth interviews drop. You can find information about FreePod on our website or through WNIJ Public Radio in DeKalb. Again, thanks, Chris. And as always, our thanks to the Mass Communications Department at Highland and the many volunteers who help make this podcast possible. Thank you, listeners, and thanks again, Chris.